Okay, so we're in chapter 4 of Daniel. Last time we saw Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, and they were delivered from the fiery furnace. Now, chapter 4 is a very different chapter in several ways. It is not actually written, as far as we know, by Daniel. It is a proclamation that was put out by Nebuchadnezzar. And it's a narrative of his downfall and deliverance. Okay? So it's actually a proclamation. It's apparently was a governmental document. And apparently God told Daniel to include it in the writings, in his stuff. So, as we saw previously, Daniel, by revelation, had told Nebuchadnezzar how God had given him this great kingdom. And he had given him the power and the might and all that he had. If you hold your place here and go to chapter 2, verse 36, where Daniel is interpreting Nebuchadnezzar's dream. I got to be careful here, right? Because if I don't look right into the camera, you won't hear me. It says in verse 36, "This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field, and the fowls of heaven, hath he given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over all them all. Thou art this head of gold," speaking of his dream and that image. So very clearly and distinctly, God told Nebuchadnezzar by way of Daniel how Nebuchadnezzar came to power, how he had all his power and might, and how he was successful. So in this chapter, Nebuchadnezzar records his sin of pride, forgetting what God had told him and the consequences he paid, and his return or deliverance, and his praising and believing, praising the true God. So, verse 1, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, unto all the people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. So all the people, nations, languages of the known civilized world, which he basically had conquered, right? So there were many different groups, many different ethnic groups, races, tribes, languages, and he understood that. So he's telling them all, "I thought it good to show you the signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me." He wanted all the people to know the greatness of God. He had already seen Daniel interpret dreams and God deliver Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego from the fiery furnace. He already knew the future of his kingdom because Daniel had, by revelation, told him about the different kingdoms that would follow his, the kingdom of gold, the kingdom of silver, the kingdom of brass, the kingdom of iron. So he knew all this. But he said, "I thought it would be good if I showed you all the great signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me." Verse 3, "How great are his signs and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation." Now, remember when Daniel revealed the interpretation of the image of the golden head and the silver and the brass and the iron, he had also revealed the stone kingdom. You know, he said a kingdom cut out of stone, which was referring to the millennial kingdom of Jesus Christ to come, the everlasting kingdom. So he already knew about that. So verse 4, he says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house and flourishing in my palace. In other words, I was enjoying my success, cooling out in my palace. You know, I had all the wine and the dancing girls, and my stereo was blasting. And I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts upon my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. You know, he was enjoying the fruits of the conquest, and he has this dream, and all of a sudden, he's disturbed. Therefore, made I a decree to bring in all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known unto me the interpretation of the dream. This almost sounds like a replay of chapter 2, where he brought all the wise men in, and he said, you know, tell me my dream and tell me the interpretation. He said, we can't do that. And so finally, Daniel came in and told him. So he calls all these wise men like he did the first time. You would think he would have learned. But let's go on. So verse 7, then came the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers, and I told the dream before them, but they did not make known unto me the interpretation thereof. You know, the first time he asked them to tell him the dream because he couldn't remember. This time he tells them the dream. He brought in the magicians, which were those who repelled demons or evil spirits by incantations. The astrologers, or so-called prophets who announce the will of heaven. Sorcerers, which were wizards. Chaldeans were the elite, the wise, you know, wise men or the learned men, and so on. And these all guys were there, but he got the same results as he got the first time. They said, we can't do this. But at the last, Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and before him I told the dream, saying. So Belteshazzar means protected of Bel. That was Nebuchadnezzar's God, his God from his land. And he says, my God, and the word my God is the word Elah, like El in Hebrew. It's Aramaic, it's Elah, the name for God or a God, right? So, the holy God, my God, and in whom the spirit of the holy God, same word, you know, different context or meaning. You know, my God would be his Bel, which is an idol, and the holy gods of Daniel would be the true God, and it would be in the plural. In chapter 2 again, verse 46, it says, you don't have to go there, I'll just read it to you. It says, then the king, Nebuchadnezzar, fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel and commanded they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. The king answered unto Daniel and said, of the truth, it is that your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing that thou couldst reveal this secret. That's how Nebuchadnezzar felt at the time when Daniel had interpreted the first dream. So now here he is interpreting the second dream. So verse 9 says, O Belteshazzar, master of the magicians, that was his, I guess, one of his titles. Remember, after he had done the first time, it said that Daniel was promoted and he sat in the gate of the king, meaning he was basically second in command, right? He was just, he made sure everything was the way it was supposed to be, and people didn't bother the king with stupid stuff. Okay. So Daniel had been put in charge of all the magicians, means all the different advisors, the counselors, the elites, the administrators. Daniel was, you know, he was the main guy. He controlled all of it. He was the head administrator of the whole empire. O Belteshazzar, master of magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, and no secrets troubleth thee. Tell me the visions of my dream that I have seen and the interpretation thereof. What secret, Eric? Yeah.
Your voice is going in and out.
Okay, I'll try to stay more in front of the laptop. Okay? Yeah. Is that better?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Thanks. So, verse 9 again. O Belteshazzar, master of magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in thee, no secret troubleth thee. Tell me the vision of my dream that I have seen and the interpretation thereof. The word secret in the Septuagint is the word mysterion, or mystery, which is what a secret is. So, verse 10, it says, thus were the visions of mine head in my bed. I saw and behold a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height thereof was great. The tree grew and was strong, and the height thereof stretched into the heaven, and the sight thereof unto the end of all the earth. This is a figure of speech. I believe it to be hyperbole. Because it says the tree grew unto heaven, and the sight thereof unto the end of the earth. Obviously, in reality, factually, that couldn't be, but it was a dream, a fantasy, and he was indicating how immense it was and how it reached out. But I'll show you a few examples. If you turn to Deuteronomy, keep your place in Daniel 4, go to Deuteronomy chapter 1. Verse 28, it says, whither shall we go up? Our brethren have discouraged our hearts, saying, the people is greater and taller than we. The cities are great and walled up to heaven. And moreover, we have seen the sons of Anakim. And, you know, and that's when they were going to go in at Kadesh Barnea, and the people were afraid because the spies came and they said, these guys are gigantic and we're like grasshoppers before them. But it says, you know, the cities are great and walled up to heaven. And it's an idiom of sorts that they used in those days, meaning it's really goes up there a long way. Let's go to 2 Chronicles, chapter 28. Verse 9. But the prophet of the Lord was there, whose name was Oded. And he went out before the host that came to Samaria and said unto them, behold, because the Lord God of your fathers was wroth with Judah, he hath delivered them into your hand, and he hath slain them in a rage that reacheth up unto heaven. Psalm 107. Psalm 107 and verse 26. It says, they mount up to the heaven, they go down again to the depths. Their soul is melted because of trouble. There's a bunch of them in this psalm. Verse 24, it says, see the works of the Lord and his wonders in the deep. For he commandeth and raiseth the stormy wind, which lifteth up the waves thereof. They mount up to the heaven. They go down again to the depths. And their soul is melted because of troubles. You know, that when you're in a storm and it seems like the waves are insurmountable. Okay, let's go to Jeremiah 51. Then we'll go back to Daniel. Jeremiah 51 and verse 9. this pertains to Babylon. It's a prophecy concerning Babylon. We'll start in verse 7. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed. Howl for her. Take balm for her pain. If so be, she may be healed. We would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her, and let us go everyone into his own country. For her judgment reacheth unto heaven, and is lifted up even to the skies. And then in verse 53, it says, though Babylon should mount up to heaven, and though she should fortify the height of her strength, yet from me shall spoilers come unto her, saith the Lord. So even though her might goes is up as high as heaven, when God determines to take her down, she's coming down. Back to Daniel. Pretty cool. Verse 12, the leaves thereof, so we're talking about this tree. The tree went up to heaven. The branches reached out to the very ends of the earth, which obviously meant, you know, as far as you could see. The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all. The beasts of the field had shadow under it. The fowls of the heaven dwelt in the boughs thereof, and all the flesh was fed of it. Something. I saw in the vision, verse 13, in the visions of my head upon my bed, and behold, a watcher and an holy one came down from heaven. A watcher in Chaldee is the name for an angelic being. So that's, and then a holy one, obviously. He cried aloud, the holy one cried aloud and said thus, hew down this tree. Hew down means what? Cut it down, right? Cut it down. And cut off his branches, shake off his leaves, scatter his fruit, let the beast get away from under it, and the fowls from his branches. What a thing. Nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass, in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beasts in the grass of the earth. A stump of roots simply means the roots could continue to live, and a new tree could grow up from it. If you've ever seen, sometimes you cut a tree off, new branches will grow up from what you leave if you don't take the stump out. And so he says, leave the stump, and the bands were to protect it so nobody bothered it. And of course, wet means it was drenched with dew. It was soaked with dew. Verse 16. Let's see, where are we? Did I read 15? Nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass in the tender grass in the field. So it will continue to live. Won't be a big tree, but it'll be alive. And the band of iron and brass will protect it in the tender grass. And let it be wet or drenched with dew of heaven. And let his portion be with the beasts in the grass of the earth. So now it's a he, and let his portion be with the beasts in the field. And then it says, and let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him. So this tree is referring to a man. It says, let his heart be changed from a man's heart to a beast's heart, and let seven times pass over him. And seven times means 7 years. Okay, 17. This manner is by the decree of the watchers, of the angels that came down from heaven. So if it's a decree from the angels that came down from heaven, it's really a decree from God. and the demand by the word of the holy ones, or mandate. The word demand is mandate. We know all about that, right? The mandate. We've heard that word a lot. Mandate by the word of the holy ones, those angelic beings, the angels, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High, that's referring to God, the Most High, nobody higher than God, nobody bigger than God, nobody more powerful than God, ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the basest of men. In other words, God can raise up whoever he wants to rule over. Mm-hmm. You know, you could be the dopiest, sloppiest, laziest, good for nothing. If God decided to raise you up and make you a king or an emperor, he could do it. So the decree of the watchers, you know, so when it says the decree of the watchers, it's a decision. In the NIV, it says the decision is announced by messengers, the holy ones declare the verdict. So, then verse 18. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now thou, O Belteshazzar, declare the interpretation thereof, for as much as all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known unto me the interpretation. But thou art able, for the spirit of the holy gods is in thee. So he recognized, he remembered that David was the guy, I mean, Daniel was the guy that could tell him his dreams and that the spirit of God was in him. Verse 19. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, I don't know why they have to keep saying it, God really pounds that in, but Daniel, whose name, that's what they called him. His name was Daniel, right? That's his birth name. But Belteshazzar was the name that Nebuchadnezzar gave him. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonied, which means astonished, for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. And the word 1 hour really means for a moment of time. It doesn't really mean an hour. It means a moment of time. Could have been a minute or 2 minutes. It doesn't necessarily mean an hour. It's just kind of a arbitrary term for he took time to think about it. I mean, it really took the dream took him back. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, okay, this is not a good dream. If I tell him, is he going to chop my head off?
Right. Yeah.
But so. He was astonied for 1 hour, and his thoughts troubled him. You know, he's thinking about it. He's going, man, this is a tough one. The king spake and said, Belteshazzar, let not the dream or the interpretation thereof trouble thee. Says, you know, okay, whether good or bad, I want to know the answer. I want the truth. Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, the dream be to them that hate thee, and the interpretation thereof of thine enemies. In other words, your enemies and the guys that don't like you are going to love the interpretation. Wonder what Nebuchadnezzar thought at that second. Oh, man. Okay. So here's the interpretation. The tree that thou sawest, which grew and was strong, whose height reached unto the heaven, and sight thereof to all the earth, whose leaves were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it was meat for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and upon whose branches the fowls of heaven had their habitation. It is thou, O king, that art grown and become strong, for thy greatness is grown and reacheth unto heaven, and thy dominion to the end of the earth. He said, you know, all this is representative of your great power and might and dominion. You know, even the beasts of the field and the fowls of the air depend upon you, because your reach is so far and wide, and every person is prospered by you and succored by you, and you're the guy. This tree represents you. Verse 23. Well, you know what? I had something here, some notes here. So hold your place here. The tree was Nebuchadnezzar. Its size and reach described the power and majesty of Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. This is something that's done several places in the Bible, and I wanted to read a couple where it describes a man as a tree. And one you're very familiar with, if you go to Psalm 1. Psalm 1, and it says, blessed or happy is the man that walketh not according, not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. I mean, that was, you know, a godly man. He likens him to a tree who's by the river, who prospers, who's not going to wither, he's not going to have problems. Let's go to Ezekiel 31. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel 31. Verse 3. Behold, the Assyrian was a cedar in Lebanon, with fair branches and with a shadowing shroud, and of an high stature, and his top was among the thick boughs. So the Assyrian. The Assyrian Empire preceded the Babylonian Empire, of which the Babylonians eventually broke away. They were under subjection to the Assyrians, and they became more powerful than them. But it was, remember, Nineveh, where Jonah went, and then they eventually conquered Israel, the northern kingdom of Israel, and took them captive and into captivity. So here it says the Assyrian was a cedar in Lebanon, with fair branches and with a shadowing shroud, and of a high stature, and his top was among the thick boughs. The water made him great. The deep set him up on high, with her rivers running round about his plants, and set out her little rivers unto all the trees of the field. Therefore his height was exalted above all the trees of the field, and his boughs were multiplied, and his branches became long because of the multitude of waters, when he shot forth. All the fowls of heaven made their nests in his boughs, and under his branches did all the beasts of the field bring forth their young, and under his shadow dwelt all the great nations. Thus was he fair in his greatness, in the length of his branches, for his root was by great waters. The cedars in the garden of God could not hide him. The fir trees were not like his boughs, and the chestnut trees were not like his branches, nor any tree in the garden of God was like unto him in his beauty. So, you know, it's a similar description, isn't it, of a tree, but it's referring to the kingdom of Assyria. So back to Daniel. So as we see, a tree can describe the greatness of a man in the Bible. So he said, it is thou, verse 22, it is thou, O king, thou art grown and become strong, for thy greatness is grown and reaches unto the heavens, and thy dominion to the end of the earth. And whereas the king saw a watcher, an angel, and holy one coming down from the heaven and saying, hew the tree down and destroy it, yet leave the stump of the roots thereof in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with dew, with the dew of heaven, and let its his portion be with the beasts of the field till seven times pass over him. Wow. That's something. So verse 24, this is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my Lord, the king. And the Most High is God. So this is the decree. Verse 25, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as an oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of the heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. Huh. Okay, so what's he saying? He says, you're going to be driven out of your kingdom. You're going to end up living in the field like an ox, and you're going to eat the grass, and you're going to get the wet dew in the morning. You'll be covered with dew, and that's the way it is. So there is a mental disease called lycanthropy, or I don't know how you say it, lycanthropy, from the Greek leukos, which means wolf, and anthropos, a man, wolfman, or a werewolf, meaning a person who thinks he is a beast of some sort. This is a real mental illness. Nebuchadnezzar's future is set. For 7 years, he will cease to live with men, but rather go naked in the field like a beast, an ox, eat grass, sleep, wake up wet with dew. And in the end, Nebuchadnezzar will know who the true God is and who allowed him to amass his power and wealth. That was the decree of God. Pretty wild, huh? if you got that, what would it make you think? Oh, hell, I better straighten up. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee after that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule, meaning God does rule. But it meant that the bands of brass and iron, they were to protect. There were going to be people there that would keep the kingdom for Nebuchadnezzar and protect it. And that when he recovered, he would become king again. That was God's assurance to him. Be amazing. So it'll be sure to thee. Means, all these years, it'll be safe, waiting for your return. And the heavens do rule is a metonymy, meaning the one who lives in heaven, God. Verse 27. Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee. My counsel, my advice. Daniel's giving him advice by revelation. Let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off the sins of righteousness, thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. Meaning, okay, this is what I'm telling you. Renounce your sins by doing the right thing, and wickedness by kindness to the oppressed. And if you do this, your peace and well-being will be extended. You'll continue to live in peace and tranquility. So it's a warning, and it's not set in stone if he decides to change. He's got a chance. All this came upon the king, Nebuchadnezzar, at the end of 12 months. So 12 months goes by since the dream, and he walked in the palace of the kingdom of Babylon. And the king spake and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for my honor of my majesty? Wow, that's pretty bold. This is his downfall. He didn't heed the advice He said, "Great Babylon that I have built." Now, Great Babylon, you can't imagine how great it was. From what archaeologists can figure out, and there's maps and stuff, there was the river Euphrates runs through the city. On one side was called the New City, and the other side was the Old City. And the original walls had a 17-mile circumference. Then on the outside of that was another new wall that Nebuchadnezzar built on top of it. Inside, there was a main gate called the Gate of Ishtar. Ishtar was a god of the East. It's where we get the word Easter. And it was inscribed with art and glazed tiles, and it was huge, gigantic. The walls of Babylon were 350 feet high. That means 35 stories. It's like a small skyscraper. The bricks were inscribed with Nebuchadnezzar's name or sign. The walls were 80 to 90 feet wide. They say that chariots could race on the top of the walls. Then on the inside of Babylon, they had broad boulevards and, you know, was cut up. They had places where they could farm and graze animals. So they were totally self-sufficient if an army came to attack them. Then in the middle was the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, which I don't know how tall they were, but they went up over the walls. And Nebuchadnezzar built it because Babylon sits on a plain called the Plains of Shinar. But his wife came from a mountainous region and she missed the mountains. So he built the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, which was, you know, like a pyramid type thing with terraces. And they built and planted trees and plants and things. It was supposed to be one of the most beautiful sites of the ancient world. And then there was the ziggurats. Ziggurats are the temples. And they were, again, like little pyramids. And they had different bunches of those in Babylon all over the place. And one of them was 7 stories high. Now, they didn't have elevators. So to get up, you had to walk. You imagine? So the army guys, the soldiers that guarded the wall, they could stay up there. They had places where they could sleep and eat and so on and so forth. And they brought them food and water. So it was an amazing, amazing city. And they estimate the population was 1 million people, which in ancient times is enormous. It's an enormous city, considering, you know, they didn't have the modern things we have. They didn't have modern transportation. They didn't have electric. They didn't have, you know, things that we have. But they were able to do that and live pretty well. So that's the Great Babylon that he built. And he's bragging about it. He said, you know, this is the Babylon, the Great Babylon that I built. Said, verse 30 again, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by my might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? Wow. The honor of my majesty. That means, you know, this really glorifies me. This shows you how great a guy I am. In Daniel 2, again, let's go back there, Daniel 2. Page or two over. And in verse 27, Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men or astrologers and managers show unto the king, but there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets, that maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and thy visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. For thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed. What should come to pass hereafter, and he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee, what shall come to pass. So that's what he told him way back then. And then in verse 37, he tells him, "Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom of power and strength and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of heaven hath given, he hath given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold." So he told them, the reason you have this is because of God. And then he warned them that he needed to get straight. And then he goes, "Well, look at the great things I've done. Man, I did this all, and it's all for my power, for my majesty, my glory. Woohoo!" What a guy. Mm-hmm. Verse 31, "While the word was in the king's mouth," while these words, man, aren't I cool? "There fell a voice from heaven saying," a voice from heaven saying, "O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee, and they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat the grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee until thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will." He wanted him to know. It's really interesting because, you know, Nebuchadnezzar is a Gentile, right? He's an idol worshiper, and yet God picked him out and caused him to rule. And he's the one that he chose to take Israel into captivity. And that's where Daniel and Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego did their things. But this is God's judgment, and it's executed quickly and exactly, just as he said. And again, in verse 32, he says, you know, this is it's from God. This is where you got all this. This is where you got the ability. It came from God. You didn't do it. Verse 33, "The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar, and he was driven from men, and did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws." You know, so the hair on his body grew out, and his fingernails and toenails grew out, and he was just like an animal in the field. Pretty crazy. Verse 34. "And at the end of days," at the end of the days, "I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes into heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me." He lifted up his eyes to where? To God. You know, animals don't, for the most part, look up into the sky. They look straight ahead. They look at the ground. They're looking to protect themselves, to hunt, whatever. He looked up into the sky. He looked to God. And when he finally did that, his understanding returned. He's telling. So this part in here was a narrative, and now he's back to telling it firsthand again. "And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation." What a change. That's a 180-degree turn. You know, he just turned it around. He took his eyes, he lifted them up to God in heaven, and God delivered him. And he blessed and praised God the Most High. What a great thing. You know, and that's true for anybody. You know, if you turn back to God, if you look to God, if you turn back to him and look up to him, he'll take care of you. He'll deliver you out of whatever you've gotten yourself into. Verse 35, "And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou?" You know, no man can stand against God. At the same time, my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and brightness returned unto me. And my counselors and my lords sought me unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. So then he was, you know, even more glorified and honored. Now, who protected his kingdom? I don't know. I would think maybe Daniel, but I don't know because it doesn't tell us. So we really don't know. We just know that his reason and his sanity returned, and he was seated again on his throne, and he was even more glorious than he was before. Verse 37. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, back over here, we'll be able to hear. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth and his ways judgment. And the word judgment means just. And those that walk in pride, he is able to abase, meaning cut down, humble them. So this chapter ends with Nebuchadnezzar's praising God and promoting the truth of God to the world. That's what this whole proclamation was, to promote and to praise God and to, you know, let everybody in the world know the truth about the true God. So, you know, as strange as it may have seemed to the Jews and to Israel, Nebuchadnezzar was that Gentile king that was chosen to do that. Be amazing. So that's where we're going to stop tonight. And between chapters 4 and 5, Nebuchadnezzar dies. And there's a period of time of several years. When this occurred, Daniel was already in his mid-50s. Because Nebuchadnezzar reigned for 40-something years. And he went into captivity the third year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign when he was a teenager. So now he's in his mid-50s when this last thing occurs. So that gives you an idea of the time span that we cover. And then after this, a couple of years later, Nebuchadnezzar dies, and then we'll pick it up in chapter 5.